This episode, just like every episode, is brought to you by Mass Monopoly. We're an adventure sports agency focused on fueling the brands that fuel us. Everyone here is an adventure junkie and loves some or all the sports we support. We help to build adventure brands through authentic, value-based marketing, growing the business without selling your soul. No bullshit, just results. Go to massmonopoly.com for a free consultation. We're also brought to you by 508 Adventure Sports. 508's a family-run business who wants to keep adventure sports affordable for families. They sell handcrafted hard goods manufactured right in their New England shop, and they have a line of handmade skateboards on sale now. They also source affordable quality accessories for the sports they love, like mountain biking gloves, skateboarding pads, helmets, and all kinds of stuff to keep you and your family out on adventures without breaking the bank. Check them out at 508.com. F-I-V-E, the letter O, the number 8.com. It's just me and my co-host today, Mickey Cormier, so let's get going.
I'm ready to do it.
Already done, and we're going. We're live. Although we're not really live. Nobody's listening live.
All right, so today's topic. What should we talk about? We're talking about what?
Social and how to stand out when everybody looks the same. And the reason I thought it would be interesting to talk about is, in at least in the space we work in adventure sports, social is it's a huge point of interest for all the companies. They spend a lot of their time and efforts to gather assets and be posting to social all the time. And they do a really good job. If you're a fan, there's a lot of brands to follow, and everything's interesting, right? Your feeds are full of great tricks and jumps and landscapes and, you know, depending on the sport, all kinds of different places. But I guess my problem with it from a brand standpoint is every single company looks exactly the same. In fact, you don't even know what the company is, because typically the products are in use, and like if it's a snowboard, you can't see the bottom of the board because they're riding it. So you don't even know what brand it is. You just know someone did cool tricks. And I guess I have a problem with the herd mentality, where everyone's doing what everyone else is doing because everyone else is doing it.
Right, right. I mean, you know, on the one hand, I see where you go. On the one hand, social is that place, you know, where you build it to embrace your tribe, or at least it's supposed to be, right? The place to build, maintain trust. Most importantly, an opportunity maybe to stand out. So the idea here is rise above the din of sameness, right?
I think so. I mean, because social lets you not just put content out there continually and all the time, but it lets you be a little bit closer to, like, to your fans and to the users of your products. It lets you be, a lot closer than your website does. You know, websites more impersonal for sure than social, where people feel more free to share and to comment and to be a part of what's going on. It's just a matter of, as you get closer, You also kind of get a little bit further away, because if someone doesn't come to, say, your Instagram feed or come to your Facebook page or your Twitter account, which they never do, right? That's where it starts, if they might be looking for a particular brand and then follow it. But then once they follow it, now you're in their feed. They're not coming to you. And when the media, whenever you're sharing whatever it is you're sharing, comes through the feed, if it doesn't differentiate you at all, it's just another great shot of someone on a bike or a board, but it's not doing anything to bring people back to you or closer to you.
Right, right. So it's like a bunch of postings of cool backflip, handheld things with the skin knee shots and ollies and 180s and whatever. But they all start to look the same. I mean, as a person who, has a particular interest, obviously we both do. So I start liking, you know, a variety of companies. And you're right. Pick three or four of those companies, right? And then all of a sudden your feed looks just like a bunch of people, you know, snowboarding or surfing or skateboarding. And the distinction between those fades. Because it's
right.
I've chosen, like, you know, whatever, four or five people. I don't know.
Yeah, I'd bet money that you can think in your head right now of the last few cool shots you saw in your feed, but I bet you can't name what brand it was.
Actually, you know what? The last one I did see, I was a Rome board. I do remember, because I had to watch it. I actually ended up watching that one like four times, just because the trick was kind of cool.
And, so good on Rome.
Well, you know what? You know what? Actually, to be honest, I knew it was Rome before I actually looked at the words, you know, the titling or anything of the actual post, because of the way that it was filmed and the kind of, it had a particular style. I think it kind of came through a little bit. They started with a little something different, and then we cut to this. They have this like way of doing of being like, I don't know, really authentic in the way that their voice about how they like think about who they are, the Rome guys, and it comes.
So are you kind of either saying that you see something different than what I'm seeing in social? Or you think the folks at Rome are doing something to make them stand out from the rest of the rest of the pack?
I think there might be something there. Just because when you asked me that question, they are definitely the first people that came to mind. Even though I know they're not the only, you know, they're not the only guys in my feed. There's plenty of guys in the feed, you know.
So what would they? What do they do to stand out?
I don't know. There was something. I think there was something about the characters that they had. The guy, there's this guy, and honestly, I don't remember his name, but there's a guy, and he just does these, really, they're not typical, all right, so they're not, it's not a typical shot, it's not a guy, he's like racing up to, you know, a ramp, a snow ramp, and then off he launches, and he does something crazy, and then he lands. This guy does like, all of a sudden, you're looking at a parked car, And it looks like somebody's backyard. And then all of a sudden, this guy comes out of nowhere. And he does, like, he goes all over the car, you know, kisses the car, does a couple little flip things, and then lands on his head, literally, in the snow pile that's next to it. Like, I think what happens in the Rome shots that I appreciate are probably not the coolest tricks, you know? But they are showing, like, the most human-looking tricks. Like, the kinds of things... You know, I would do because I'm stupid, and then, you know, and then just fail because, well, you know,
that's something different right there, right? That's fun and that's cool. That's showing the guy laying on his head. He probably did it on purpose, but that's not the way you expect it to end. So they're doing something different in even the way, even what they're putting out there, because 90% of what you do see out there is the trick performed perfectly, executed perfectly, landed, and off they go. Which and some of the brands that I've seen recently, they'll post a succession. So they'll post like three posts over a few hours or a day, and they'll show the first like three or six efforts at a trick where they crash, and then they finally show it done right, or in the reverse, they'll show it done, and then they'll show all the tries it took to get there. Which that I think is more interesting, and that's where I want to get into talking a little bit about what they can do to stand out. What's a different way? And I think you're dead on. Crashing is a great way because they don't always show that.
Yeah, it's not actually the crash. Obviously, I think deep down, okay, what people or at least what I'm responding to on a more human kind of thing is this this authentic thing where I'm relating to suddenly this guy who was obviously, as you said, he probably did that, maybe he didn't, maybe it was a mistake, I don't know, it doesn't matter, made me feel closer to that experience because I could see myself being that ridiculous and doing something that dumb, you know. And
well, yeah, we all fall, we all crash, it's part of whatever you're doing, right?
Exactly. So sort of connecting on a more individual human way, mm-hmm. kind of felt authentic. It felt real, you know. I think that real thing. That's hard. That's a little bit of an intangible, but yeah. It's totally doable because they did it, you know.
Yeah, I agree. Real is hard.
I don't know. So yeah. So what else? I mean, what else is that? I mean, things to make you authentic. That's a whole other conversation, I guess, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, why not? Why not this one? Who cares where it goes? I just think that anything we can think through or brainstorm on, what jumps out in the social feed, what can help to trigger? What you really want out of social is someone to interact with it, right? What triggers that? What gets someone to comment, to share? what gets someone to go from your social feed over to your website or to interact with you as a brand more? What causes that? Like, did you you already follow Rome clearly? Did you do anything from that? Did you like it? Did you go over to their website and see what they were doing?
I totally liked it. No, actually, yes. I mean, initially I did. I did go to the website just to take a look at it. You know, I'm going there too for alternative purposes and like looking at the design. I want to see what kind of boards they have. What's the artwork like? Stuff like that, you know?
And the liking thing, that helps too, right? I think likes are a bit underrated because they don't amount to anything in a sales capacity or anything. But it's very tribal. You like things so that others can see what you like, you know, in the social sphere. It's a way of saying, hey, this represents me. And I think that that's a good place to start for some of these brands is when you have, let's say you've been posting 3 times a day for the last year, go into some analytics and look at what got the most just likes, what got the most reactions, what got somebody to pause their day for a tenth of a second and do something because of your post. And then look at why. What were those posts about? Is there a common story in those that you can figure out how you should be, you know, moving forward and doing more of your work?
I think you're right. I think it isn't so much about the number of likes, but the high engagement, right, versus the number of followers you have, which means that your content is probably more like it's good content because it's engaged with. Right. So beyond even likes, perhaps take a look at likes and shares, mm-hmm. because if I repost, OK, that's sort of starting now something virally in my own network. Right. And that's I think is more valuable than just like the thumbs up thing. Like how how likely or can, you know, is your content, you know, able to spread virally? I think that's a cool thing. So maybe you have like, yay, you know, you get a like a day from, you know, and you have like a million likes on something, but nobody shares it or, you know, nobody clicks on it or, you know, I think those are far less valuable, right? So if you had half that, right, number of likes, but those likes had people actually sharing that material or clicking into something, well, you're engaged, you know, that engagement, that's way more valuable than the other 500 likes of, like, you know, Facebook people that, or wherever, Instagram peeps or whatever you were posting, right?
Yeah.
So so how do you get that high engagement? That's a good question too.
Yeah, and I wonder too about social. Is too much time spent on trying to spread things out through social? And I don't mean that to diminish the importance of the how it helps to build the brand and get out there in front of a lot of people that you're not currently in front of. But I think a lot of what people do on social, they forget to think about why. What are they trying mm-hmm. to achieve, right? Their marketing efforts. But and some do a bang up job and they clearly lead back to business. But what a lot of them are just social to have stuff on social to say they're on social, and they forget to think about why they're posting the content.
Yeah, I think people should just not do something just because everybody else is doing it. I mean, you got to think about the target and what social platforms your audience, right, is spending a significant amount of time on. I think that when you figure that, so it comes back down to the audience. Really, it's really you need to figure out who you are. Right, so that you can say who you are. You want people to understand and connect with that. The why am I making snowboards or bikes or skateboards or surfboards? What's that for me? And then you need to convey it to that audience that also is going to connect with why you do what you do.
Yeah, and I think there's also there's a ton of pressure, as silly as it sounds, there's a ton of pressure to do like everybody else in an industry. I was talking to a kind of a loud, vibrant brand yesterday, a mountain biking company, and they operate differently than a lot of the folks, and they get a lot of feedback on that and pressure from people. So they do things differently. And it leads to, I would say, arguably success in the market, and it gets them noticed, and it does, it's very effective. But there's also the even internal pressures from people saying, hey, what, why are we doing this so different? Everyone else does this. Should we maybe look at that? You know, and they have the fortitude to say, no, that's not how we do things. We do things this way. But I don't think everyone, you know, it's kind of like everyone says, I don't care what other people think, but we all know that when you're a kid on the playground, you care very much about what everyone else thinks. And I don't think that goes away, especially for marketing people who are, you know, they have to answer to what they've done every day. And they can say, well, you know, look, we compete with these guys and we're doing what they're doing. We look like them. We're all the same, which, I mean, everyone knows that being the same isn't going to help. But why do they keep doing it?
Well, it is the quickest way. Right, it's the cheap initial way to get. Sorry, excuse me. That's a cheap shot, a way to get recognized, to get eyeballs on something, is to be, you know, almost as if you were in mistaken company. So, you know, I'm gonna roll with all these cheetahs. I gotta look like a cheetah. You know what I mean? Because then the cheetahs, you know, will embrace me and take me in, and all the other cheetahs looking at me will just think I'm a cheetah. So we could all hang, right?
What do you think that's about, though? Do you think, and I know there's no black and white, I'm just curious what you think, is that more trying to get noticed by being like everyone else? Or is that sort of a cover-your-ass strategy where you can show that you're doing what's normal in the industry to, like, your boss, to whoever I think, marketing answers to? Is that a safety net?
I think it's a little bit of both things.
Probably.
I also think that maybe, you know, maybe it comes also from a real lack of, it could come from the brand. It could come from a lack of strength in voice in the brand. If the brand is trying to be too many things to too many people, that kind of vanilla thing, you know, you're stuck with it. And what are you going to do? Well, you got to do what everybody else is doing just to maintain relevance. Because if you've got genuine, you know, If you're responding thoughtfully to interactions that are tailored and, you know, responses to an audience, it's a unique voice. There's nothing that you, it's like talking to, I mean, this, I think the problem is you look at this platform, this digital space, and think it's different than talking to you face to face. Yes, technically it is. I'm not looking in your eyeballs. I'm not smelling your sweaty man sweat from over here. but it's at the same time, right? We're having a genuine conversation. It's not faked. I'm still talking to you. I want to hear what you have to say.
Supposedly, I think we have to make a new t-shirt. Hashtag sweaty man sweat.
Supposedly you want to hear what I have to say. The kind of genuine interaction that happens, that it's, you know, this kind of thing that would happen in a digital space is not less valuable than a handshake or, you know, seeing somebody eye to eye. I think it's a misconception to minimize the effect that it has with people. I think this space could influence people in an actually deeper way than that interaction. Some people
People are defining themselves now a lot by whatever they outwardly say to the world. This is me. This is my box, my tribe. This is what I'm interested in. You know, it sort of defines
exactly.
Me. And for what it's worth, you know, I can sit here and talk about bold brands and doing things differently and the people that stand out. But there's also the flip side of that coin where if it works, it works. You know, if all the top brands are doing this one thing, then maybe you do explore chasing that and seeing what you can get out of it, learn from it, because it's working, right? I mean, there's certain things that Apple does, there's certain things that Nike does that work, and brands copy it, and it works for them too. I mean, you know, I can sit here on my soapbox all day. I prefer when brands do stand out, but there probably is some herd mentality that helps too, because you can glom on to trends. You can become part of, you know, by piggybacking on someone else's success with a campaign or a hashtag or an idea or a concept, you can piggyback on some of that traffic, some of that search.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm not saying that that's not a valuable way to start. I think that's a total valid way to start. I think I'm suggesting that, and you know, peer research and peer auditing, totally you should look at what others are doing. Engage. You know, what you should be doing is being honest. Gauge. Am I doing this just to be different? Is it better? Can I say it's better? Is what I'm doing better? Is it just different? If it's different just to be different, there's no value to you know, your audience in it being different, then, you know, you might as well run what everyone else is doing. But, you know, I can't believe that there isn't something like nuggety, you know, in all of the brands that can be used in a unique way. I just don't think that they're, I think they take a look at what everybody's doing and they just start doing it. They get some result, right? That's positive. So the inclination at that point, right, is why should I change? Why should I do something different now? I'm getting a result from this. And all I'm suggesting is that that result could be so much bigger, better, more meaningful than you might even lose, you know, some followers who don't like what you have to say. But what you're gaining, right, in effect, are fans who really love you. And those people are going to buy stuff from you. And that's what you want to do anyway, right? Get people to buy stuff from you.
You know, I think you brought up something, I agree, but I think a few seconds ago you brought up something really, really interesting that I think impacts us just as much as anything else. And that's the capabilities, right, of the marketing folks, especially internal marketing teams that are handling it, where you brought up, you know, looking at everything that you're putting out and saying, is it different? Is it different for a reason, or is it different just because? And taking that careful look at everything, that probably happens in the beginning of a campaign, or when you decide to get into social, or when you haven't done something new, right?
Yeah.
But then it slips into day to day and it starts to become a norm and things get systemized and things start to just become the way it's done. And it's not like a fault thing. It's marketing teams. I have yet to meet one that has extra capacity. You know, they're always worked.
Absolutely.
Balls to the wall, and there's no time for strategic thinking. There's no time to go back and look over every single thing that you're doing. They have to be efficient in some way, but there's got to be a middle ground where you're not letting your stuff become too vanilla, even if it was edgy or interesting or on brand when it started. You know, everything evolves. And if you don't evolve with the market, with the brand, with the trends, with the gear, and you're still doing the same thing that you were doing 6 months or a year later,
right.
If it's too programmatic,
it's coasting.
People can smell that, right? People sniff that out if it's coasting. Because I would say when you're just coasting and you're putting out the same shit all the time, now you're getting closer to, it's just, might as well just do a banner ad, which people gloss over and don't pay attention to because they know it's an ad, they know it's programmatic, they know it's just being fed there, you know, either because of some profile you've got on them, or a website they visited, as opposed to something like the Rome video where a guy lands on his head that really caught your attention.
Right. You know, I mean, what that Rome video is really doing, right, is kind of inviting the person into the Rome world, right? It's trust through transparency. Like, that's huge. It's kind of, you know, creating a sort of brand loyalty around the idea of being, you know, authentic, right?
Yeah, it's authenticity, right? I mean, that's what comes in with all these brands. And a lot of these sports, the more adventurous sports, you know, skating, surfing, snowboarding, mountain biking, they were born from a rebellious attitude. They were born from that, I'm an individual, I'm outside
I'm
the
unique,
norm.
Yeah,
and then when they feel that way, of course it resonates with the folks who are into it, you know, speaking in general terms.
Of course.
But yeah, you're right. If it's just glossed over, it's you're just not speaking the same language anymore. You're not talking to them the way they want to be spoken to, or the way it's going to resonate with them.
Right, and because I feel like, because even that kind of idea, the idea of the punk generation or any rebel rock generation you can think of, as soon as it starts to become like popular and you start to farm it out and it becomes homogenized for everyone, then it isn't cool anymore, is it? It's not individual or unique. It becomes, you know, the same. And right. So what you want to do, because it is the same, because now you're talking all the same language, you're using the same things, and trending, right? When you're talking about following trends, it's not about really following what the other guy's doing. What you want to be doing is being ahead of that. Like, you need to look at the trend and then see where that trend might be going so you could be ahead of what this guy next to you is doing.
Well, yeah, I like what you're saying because, I mean, it goes, and I have some thoughts on that, it goes back to what we were originally talking about, right, where social in general is whitewash. It's become everyone's posting the same thing within their genre of sport, right? So it's always just tricks, gear, tricks, gear, tricks, gear. What about looking at what the people who buy your products actually want and need? For instance, I think there's a huge opportunity in any age group. It's not even like if you're targeting millennials, which, you know, is like typical for a skateboard company, or if you're targeting older folks, Gen X and older for, you know, mountain bikes and other things. I think that the brands, and they should keep showing the cool tricks and the competition and the, you know, the World Cups and all that high level stuff. But that is 1% of the market. And that is, I doubt it's 1%. That's a top end of the market where most people that they need to be interacting with don't watch the World Cup. They don't watch the X Games. They don't have Red Bull TV. They're just not interested. They like riding their bike or their skateboard or their snowboard, and they do it because it's fun and it's one of their hobbies. Those are the people that buy the bulk of the products. And I think there's a missed opportunity for doing a lot of like value-based content and carrying it through to social, where you're teaching them how to set their bindings. You're teaching them how to clean their chain. You're teaching them how to get more out of the sport that makes them connected to you, as opposed to a product that connects them to you, or, you know, some pro rider or someone doing a trick. Like, that's, I just think there's an opportunity with social, because it's more personal, to have a better relationship by offering value that you can provide as a brand, because you have that knowledge. You know, because you make bikes, how to tune a bike a lot better than I would, where I haven't learned how to do it, so to speak. Or same with a snowboard, right? I might look at my snowboard and I might strap my feet into my bindings every year the way it came. But what if there's a way I could ride better and I just haven't had the information to tweak them or understand why I might change the angles or what I might do? I think there's, and I'm not just talking about how-tos with equipment, but how-tos with, you know, body position or how to ride different hill types, or how there's so much that you can do to offer just insights into getting more out of the sports that make it personal, that make it human, that I think opens up a much deeper conversation between the brand and the customer than when it's just, oh, hey, nice trick, cool ollie.
Right. No, that's totally, I think what you're talking about is totally the secret sauce, because that's like a unique thing, you know, to each company. I think each company's got to have, I mean, they won't be successful if they're not, if they don't have like this unique thing, a reason, that raison d'etre, their why, right? And that why is conveyed through, like, I make bikes because I want other people to ride and have fun just like I do, and do it in an affordable way. And that, right, that's a message. Mm-hmm. That's a reason. So in, you know, maybe they're guys that build community, and they promote groups and teams and all of that stuff because they want all the people to join in and ride. And maybe what you're talking about, some, you know, they've got leadership, and their leadership wants to talk to you about how they ride and how you can ride better. I mean, those kinds of things, those are really cool. Those are like little personal real stories that you can share with other people. It lets them behind what I was talking about, that sort of, you know, that transparency, truth and transparency, that lets them see behind the wall, behind the magical curtain, and shares that secret sauce you have as a company with those potential people. I think that's kind of a cool thing.
I mean, and I think that relationship where you're transparent, where you're more authentic, that's how you create relationships in life, right? When you have a decent back and forth between two people, that's a relationship. And I think that as a brand, that establishes a trust and it creates a connection where do you want somebody to buy one of your products once in a store, or do you want someone to have a relationship with you and buy something from you five times over the lifetime of that relationship?
Exactly, exactly.
And I think you do that, you know, not through, well, it depends on the industry. I'm speaking in blanket terms, but in adventure sports, you don't do that by discounts and bulk sales. You do it by making somebody feel like they're represented well by you. There's a connection between you, your brand, and them that make them go out on the hill, go out to the park, wherever they're going, whatever their sport they're doing, that they feel properly represented. They feel like they're expressing themselves with what they've chosen to buy, with the gear they've chosen to use.
I know. And actually, you know, that sounds on the surface like something so simple, but some of what, you know, what that requires on a marketing team's calendar is a lot of back and forth, a lot of actual, real, you know, focused, genuine content, a lot of interaction and engagement pieces out there that would convey those kinds of things. And I think, you know, so, you know, to answer the previous question when we started, I mean, I think, you know, if you've got a limited team and limited time, and maybe you've not allocated enough to your digital budget, you know, what you end up doing, right, is playing that I'm at least as cool as everybody else
can. Yeah, yeah, true.
And yeah. I think, and while initially, right, that kind of thing, maybe in the first couple of years, even that, you know, that might work, you know, for a while, it is not maintainable because there are just too many other people doing that same thing. And there are too many unique individuals trying to tell actual stories, to be authentic. And those are the people that are going to get, those are going to be the people that get the eyeballs and the sales. And then most importantly, the sale.
Yeah.
You're going to have a lifelong customer. And you, if you want a lifelong customer, you're going to have to speak to them.
Yeah, I think something you said there really resonates too, because it's over time it becomes whitewash if everyone's doing the same thing. And I think the sea of companies is getting bigger fast in almost every adventure sport that's out there, with like skateboarding is going to be in the 2020 Olympics, with mainstream sports like football and hockey coming under real scrutiny with CTE and the problems with head trauma. I think parents, kids, I think people are looking for other outlets and other things to do. And probably partly because of that, and partly just because they're fun and they're getting more exposure now than ever, all these sports are growing. You know, snowboarding's finally growing again. Skating is growing again. Mountain biking's just been off the charts growth. So is, you know, road riding. I don't mean to leave out other disciplines. But they're all exploding. They're all growing real fast. And what that means is more brands are going to be flooding the market, right? More and more and more are coming in. And if you look at any of those markets, it's already full of big companies, medium companies, small companies, and boutique. And the boutiques are getting more and more because barriers to entry are gone, and it's easy for people to start to create things and have ideas. So really figuring out why should somebody spend some of their attention on you, I think is going to become more and more and more important in this industry. Well, it already is, right? It's just getting more important by the day, because you're just going to get left behind.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And, you know, that's a thing. It's a total thing. And it requires time and effort. And it's painful, right, to like say that, time and effort. It's like real work I have to do. Social seems so simple, and it's really not. It is exactly like you're talking to someone. If you, the energy you put in and out to be a real person in a real world scenario is exactly the kind of energy you want to convey online, because people can sniff that unauthentic thing from a mile away.
Yeah.
And they're just not gonna, you know, they might like you for those cool little tricks, but you know, that's it. You'll always be like that Facebook like and never be, you know, in their garage. That's
right.
Where you want to be.
And I think there's a tendency with most of these brands to, especially, you know, in the industries where it's relevant to have pro riders in competition, they focus a lot on those pros. And I think that's part of it, and it's important. So I'm not saying that they shouldn't do that, but that tends to be a large, dominant part of their marketing and their focus, where the problem in that is that rider might ride for someone else next year. And what you're doing is you're creating a relationship between a person instead of your brand and the customer.
Exactly.
And that's yep. really dangerous, because they ride for company X this year, they ride for company Y next year. All those eyeballs and all the money spent building that relationship and that trust, they're moving on over to that next brand with that celebrity, with that professional, with that, you know, the winner. So I'm not saying it's bad. It is good. It's cool to have the, you know, a hot athlete on the team, but be careful that that's not what you're building your brand on, that they're building their career on your brand.
Right, exactly. I mean, there's a lot of examples of exactly what you're talking about. I used to work with this golf company, and they had a very big leadership program, and one of the guys that played their golf ball was Tiger Woods. And as soon as Tiger Woods became Tiger Woods we know today,
the infamous,
you know,
Tiger Woods?
The infamous, no, before the infamous Tiger Woods, maybe just the awe.
Oh,
Tiger
okay,
Woods,
okay.
The you know, crowned with like gold on his head, and
King
just
Tiger,
not miss, and King Tiger. So as soon as King Tiger becomes that guy, he's off. Nike gets him, you know, and then who do you think that you know they're following? They're following Tiger Woods.
Yes.
They're not following you anymore. It's Tiger. What is he playing? I'm playing that now. So hanging your hat there, you're absolutely right. That is not the way to go.
Right. And do you want the Tiger Woods? I mean, shit, yeah, you want the Tiger Woods. But then I think you got to be careful how you position your relationship with Tiger Woods so that your brand becomes the relationship, not the athlete.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yep. You know, I really find that interesting, don't you? I mean, going back to what you just said about Olympic skateboarding, that is such a fascinating, awesome thing. You know what
else?
It's
going to be awesome.
Oh my God, yeah. Tokyo, too. I mean, talk about what a crazy, awesome place to have the Olympic skateboarding in 2020.
I know.
That's crazy.
Cross-country,
you know,
mountain biking is in it, too. I mean, I'm excited for a lot of the... I don't know if that's new or not. I'm not a huge Olympic guy, but it's new to me. It's new to me that it's in there. So I think that's great. I mean, those are sports that I will tune into the Olympics to see. I'm excited to see mountain biking in there, skateboarding in there. That's of interest to me.
Well, it also includes surfing, dude. So
nice.
I'm personally excited by this as well. I've been waiting for them to say, hey, surfers, you're a sport too. You have, like, you know, skills.
Is that new? Is surfing new too?
Uh-huh, absolutely. The surfing community has wanted that to be a sport for forever.
Well, shit, that just goes to what I was saying about these industries getting bigger rapidly, and that's going to be a catalyst. I mean, once the Olympics airs, you're going to have... the ones positioned to sell cross-country bikes and skateboards and surfboards that will help people get off the couch after they watch the Olympics, they're going to be positioned well.
I think that's amazing. That whole industry is going to blow up. That's going to be fantastic.
That's really interesting. I'm going to watch, and I'm thinking about surfing. I mean, how do you judge surfing
in the Olympics,
where... Go ahead.
Yeah, well, it's based on, well, you know, they already have a World Surfing League. So we already have like World Cups of surfing that happen during the year, contests.
Sure.
But those are sponsored by, you know, major brands like Quicksilver or whoever, right? And so they're basically filmed through, you know, wherever they think the best swell is going to be. New York once had one, which was funny, because Quicksilver sponsored Montauk, Long Island, to have an event, and it got lucky because you know, the East Coast isn't really known in the summertime for like large swells, but we had some sort of a miracle swell, and Kelly Slater was incredible, and the whole thing blew up, and it was awesome. But it's like, those kinds of things are really dependent on Mother Nature. You know, Mother Nature in that sense can really wreck your game. But then, you know, that's when a real professional you know, shines, because they can make that stinky slop wave that I could never ride. I couldn't even get on it. You know, they can make it look simple. They could do like amazing little quick little snap things, and my eyeballs pop out of my head, you know?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about, though, with how do you judge it in an Olympic setting where you're is a lot on chance, right? There's a lot on luck, where the Olympics isn't supposed to be luck. Where I'm thinking of like slope style for snowboarding. There is some luck in where you get wind and you can get, you know, different slight weather changes throughout the day. But the course is the course. You know, you're riding down the hill on the same features as everybody else, where every single wave is totally unpredictable, totally new.
And it's totally different, right?
Do they have to just build giant wave pool and make it all even?
You know, what I'm thinking is that they might actually do that. They might have a wave park. You know, those are very popular now. Kelly Slater has one down, I think it's in Florida, that, you know, generates, I don't know, I don't remember how long it is, but it's a huge wave, and like all the pros have been on it at least one time, and they do a lot of practicing down there. So they use his surf. So as a guy who's going into retirement, I say that and I just cry inside because that guy's amazing. But, you know, he's decided, he's like looked at this and said, hey, you know, I can generate an awesome wave. And that's fun. What can we do with that, right? It makes it viable, right, to have an Olympic setting, because now you're right. You've now created a course that's unified. So now it's not just Mother Nature and that guy who has some luck and who can like read the waves and pick the right one and get in the right spot. And you're right, some of that has to do with like instinct. That was Kelly Slater's thing. I think they always called him the wave god, because like he just knew. He just picked the right one every single freaking time. It was maddening. In this case, boom, you level the playing field, and now it's really up to that rider's specific brand of skill set, you know?
Yeah.
It should be really interesting. I got to read up more on it, like how they're going to handle that. I mean, it's not as if Japan didn't have waves. They've got waves, you know?
Sure, aren't you pissed off if you're an Olympic athlete and you get sent out for your turn and the biggest wave that comes up is like a 3-footer and everyone else is riding huge waves? And that's just, all right, too bad, that's your shot.
In competition, it happens all the time. They'll call the competition in the middle of the day because the swell just stopped. It stopped rolling. So, we'll start again tomorrow. It's like very surfery.
Yeah, it is what it is.
Chill about it.
It is what it is. It just seems like in an Olympic setting.
Yeah, how does that actually work?
Yeah.
You know, they have sponsors and timing, and, you know, they can't just delay. We'll just wait a week while the swell builds up again. No, it's not like that, right?
Well, plus, I just feel like the human element, I feel bad for the athletes who have been training and positioned themselves to get into the Olympics, and then they travel across the world to compete, and then, well, here's your shit wave. Go home. You know, I mean, I guess it is what it is. There's risk in the sports, and there's definitely luck in the sports too, with all of them. I mean, look at downhill mountain bike racing. You think there's not luck that you even lived down those hills? Like, of course there is, but I don't know. And I don't have an argument for it. It just seems like the Olympics needs to do their best to remove luck, because professional competitions, like you're talking about with surfing competitions, or if you're looking at the downhill World Cup and biking, those are corporate run with sponsors by professional riders, and they're going to do 20 of those races in a year, or those competitions, or whatever it might be, you know, whether it's surfing or skating or snowboarding. They're going to do a lot of competitions, and that sort of levels the luck playing field for the riders in different countries and different competitions. The Olympics is one time, you get one shot, and then maybe in a number of years down the road you could get a second spot, but probably not if you had bad luck the first time, right? That to me is just so daunting.
Wow. Okay, dude, get this. I because all of this conversation has just made me curious, I went and looked it up, and it was, everyone was talking about Kelly Slater's wave pool, and they believed that maybe that would be like how they would do it, you know, and the objective being an unchanged course, like you were saying, like a half pipe or a track. No, they actually decided that It will take place in the ocean, and it will be called at Sheeta, which is like this Sheeta. It's a name for a beach located 40 miles outside of Tokyo in the province of Chiba.
What's the shark situation there?
Big ones? I mean, it's the Pacific, so yeah, they probably have shark, but I don't think, we're not talking great whites to eat people. They don't get a lot of, you know, they don't allow shark attacks over there. It's not like Australia. You know, yeah, they have to like float guys out there to check for sharks. And one of the contestants last year nearly got eaten. That was sad. He had to actually beat the shark away with his board.
I remember that.
You remember that guy?
Not cool.
No, you were like, not cool. I'm not going in there.
No, hell no.
So that's an interesting decision, right? So you're wrong, man. They're not gonna. They don't care about it being the same track or any of that. Here we go. We're gonna go on this beach. It's gonna be wild.
Yeah, I'm not saying they care. I'm saying I care. Like I feel bad for the Olympic athlete that gets the short end of the stick. I want to see the fair shake so that the athlete gets to compete, not the luck of the athlete.
That's so interesting. Yeah. What are you going to do? I guess we just see how it goes.
Yeah, I mean,
If it doesn't go well, they'll probably drop it right from the Olympics for next year. So
yeah, let's hope it goes well. Because I remember in the Winter Olympics watching some of the ski jump competitions, and some of them where some of the athletes had perfect weather and some were like almost benched. It was so windy they couldn't jump, or they'd get their run and they'd get a headwind, which would obviously ruin their jump, as opposed to having a tailwind or no wind. You know, it's totally something's being taken from them. And I don't know, to me it just seems like it's such a more dramatic loss than in a professional competition. Because again, you're going to compete, you know, all year long in all the competitions. If you're a pro athlete, the Olympics is just that one shot. You're out.
Wow. Yeah, I don't know. I guess we're going to have to wait and see. That's going to be cool. All right, well, did we talk this through?
I think I've said what I have to say. You got anything else?
I got not much else, actually. I mean, I think we can leave with, like, what do you think? The two big bullet points from this would be what? Be authentic, be real, be transparent, and that gains you trust and earns you the right to be in my garage.
I think everyone thinks they are. So I think look harder at, are you actually being authentic? Are you actually being yourself and different? Because everyone knows that and says that of course you have to be yourself, but then there's no proof in that pudding. And then the second one, I think, is ask how you can help the people that buy your stuff. How can you provide them with things they would find interesting?
Right. Always thinking about your audience.
Yeah.
Who they are, what do they want, and how you want them to become part of your family.
Right.
You know?
You think about your brand, what it is that you produce and sell, what makes your brand unique, and then how can you take that and influence and make their life better in some way, shape, or form in the capacity that you play in their life. So if you're a brand, how can you help them get more out of why they would even know who you are? So if you're a snowboard brand, or if you're a bike brand or a surf brand, rather than just saying, hey, we have the great tech, we've got good prices, whatever your actual sales differentiators are, how about, how are you going to make me enjoy surfing more? How are you going to make my time on the bike better? And focus on some of that, and then let that relationship build the sales differentiators.
I think that's the most important thing. And then you need to execute on it, you know? You need to mm-hmm. work on it, and it needs to be something that is done almost, you know, monthly and looked at monthly or bi-monthly or, you know, or even weekly, depending on what's going on, right? It needs to be worked on. It needs to be reviewed. It needs to be checked and measured. You got to make sure you're doing the right thing. And that's the greatest thing about digital. You can make a pivot. Anytime in the process, you can just say, oh, this isn't working, and pivot and make it, change it.
Yeah.
Find the way that works, you know? You know, I I also think that too many people take it for granted that digital is just there and people are there and they're just going to see stuff and it's just there, you know, and they're not putting the work in, they're not putting the effort, and it's kind of showing.
Yep, I agree. Boom, that's your homework, Brands. Go do that stuff.
Yeah, go do that stuff.
All right.
All right. Well, it was a pleasure talking with you once again, sir.
So fun. So fun.
You little crazy Viking, you.
All right. See ya.
All right. Ciao.